Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Imperfect Leaders. If you like today's show, please consider sharing us with your friends. Until then, sit back and enjoy today's episode. Today's guest, Stan Van Gundy, is an icon in sports and broadcasting. Before his current stint as a top basketball analyst on TNT, he was an NBA coach for several top teams, most recently with the New Orleans Pelicans. According to Coach Van Gundy, the best talent across all disciplines, not just in sports, but in music, academia, and certainly in business, don't just welcome occasional feedback and advice, they absolutely crave it. So we start today's conversation with the story of one of Van Gundy's former players, J.J. Redick, who constantly pushed himself and his limits and stretched outside of his comfort zone. This is great advice for anyone who wants to compete at the highest possible level. So I hope you'll enjoy today's conversation with my new friend, Coach Stan Van Gundy.
I don't care how talented you are. Everyone stumbles. Everyone at some point is going to face adversity. And everyone is going to face moments where they wonder, and am I good enough? You know, they have some self-doubt. And I think the people who have always been stars, I think it's hard for them. Most of us weren't always the star, you know, and so we hit adversity at every level. And so we've sort of learned those lessons. But the people who cruise through and now, gosh, you hit the professional world and you're having to learn those lessons, I think some of them really get knocked on their butts hard because they're not able to handle the first time where it's, wow, there's a lot of good people out here and you're not the best. And JJ was able to get to that point. Now, I think for him, even though he'd always been really good, he was actually a big part of him always being really good was his work ethic and what he put in. Because if you look at him, even at a level like Duke, if you look at his height and his wingspan and his quickness and everything else, I mean, he was not a terribly gifted athlete. Mm-hmm. He was a guy who had worked hard to develop his skills and his conditioning and his toughness and everything else. And that's what made him great. And so he was able to carry that over into the NBA. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's what got him through.
Recognizing that everyone is going to fail, or they're probably not stretching themselves far enough.
Great point.
What should the younger generation of talent do to prepare themselves for that inevitable failure and also enhancing their ability to bounce back? And is there, you know, observationally speaking, is there a difference between this new generation and an older generation?
You know, a lot of people will say kids today are different. And I would counter that and say, no, the way we raise kids and teach kids is what's different. I mean, look, we're all born pretty much the same. I mean, we're, you know, blank slates to a large degree in the whole thing. And, you know, I was raised on personal responsibility and things like that. My parents were not, and not just my parents, teachers, coaches, not big on excuses. You know, I remember, you know, getting in trouble in school as a young kid and coming home and trying the line on, you know, my mom. Well, you know, my teacher doesn't like me. And my mom said, that's probably true. Now, why do you think that is? You know, I mean, it's going to bring it right back to me. Now, I think what we see a lot of is when that kid comes home and says, you know, teacher gave me a C or a D on a test. Parents call the teacher and intimate there's something wrong with the teacher because nothing could be wrong with little Johnny. And so I think we've changed, but we've changed in the way we mentor and teach kids. And it's all about now, a lot of it's about always trying to make people feel good. And yet we know that that's not always, like, you've got to get out of your, you've got to be uncomfortable. You got to get out of your comfort zone to actually improve in anything. There's a great educational psychologist at Stanford, Carol Dweck, wrote the book Mindset. I read it 3 or 4 times and finally contacted her and said, you know, I want to come out and talk to you, because it's the best coaching, parenting, teaching book that I had read. And one of the things she says to her graduate students every year is, well, you obviously had to be very good students to get into the graduate program here at Stanford University. Now, do you want me to spend the semester telling you how great you are? Or do you want me to spend the semester trying to help make you better? And she asks them that, and with expecting a response from her students, not a hypothetical out there, but no, what do you want me to do? Because, you know, we've grown up in this era of everybody gets a participation trophy and we can't have a valedictorian at the school anymore. And, you know, because we don't want to make anybody feel bad or anything else. And what's come with that is, how do you improve if you never have anybody who has the guts to tell you this is what you need to do better? That's not, you know, being demeaning to somebody. It's just saying, if you want to be the best you can be. And I think the humble people, a guy like JJ Redick, he wants to know that. He expects to know that. Like, he wants you to tell him, you know, why am I missing this shot? Well, you're drifting. You're not getting straight up and down on your shot. You're drifting. You show it to him on film. He goes to work. He doesn't want somebody to come in when he's 0-for-5 the night before and pat him on the back and say, hey, don't worry about it. You're a great shooter. No. He doesn't want to be 0-for-5. Why'd I miss? That's a tremendous character advantage over people who don't want to ever hear anything negative. Some 6'8", 240-pound guy driving the ball down the lane, and I'm a point guard in the league. Will I plant my body in front of that guy and get run over and take the charge to benefit our team? Will I, you know, get up and into the ball and power over screens to get through? Will I set a solid screen and have the guy, you know, basically the defender running right through my chest? Those are things of physical toughness. You have to define those things. I think if you say to a player, you're not tough enough, you'll get an argument and a befuddled look back. Everybody wants to think they're tough. You've got to show them these are the things that need to be done if we're going to win. And it's the same with resilience or any of these qualities we talk about. I think the words are fine once they're define. These are the behaviors and the actions that we think define these words.
And how important is it to get certain players on the team to model those behaviors? And is it true that, you know, everyone on the team in some way can and should be a leader?
I think it's absolutely essential. Like I think in any group, team, organization, and anything, there's certainly going to be the person at the top. That person, you know, will, I think, have two major roles, probably more, but two major roles. One is you're going to set the vision for what it is we're trying to accomplish and how we plan to get there. And then that person at the top has to be, in some cases where we can't get to consensus, has to be the ultimate decision maker. And so there is a positional type of leader. But once we have defined our culture, everyone in the organization, I think, takes a role in terms of leadership in modeling and promoting that culture. Because I think in large part, two reasons. Number one, not everybody is led by the same people. Not everybody chooses to follow the same people. We need as many people as possible to be leaders. I think that's one thing. And then the other thing is, you know, we'll hear on teams all the time, well, this guy's their leader. And that's great. But that puts a lot of pressure on that one person. And I've been around some great leaders, but nobody has it every day. Like, I think I'm a good leader as a coach. Nobody has it every day. There's days that you come in there and your energy's not as good. You may be distracted by something else. Well, who's going to lead on that day? You know, who's going to take over that leadership? If you are in any organization, I think if you're stuck on one person has to be the leader, well, there's days we'd be better off not following that person because they don't have it. And so for me, heck, it could vary from drill to drill. You know, we might be in a drill where the guy who's setting the best example, you know, might be Joe over here, and you're trying to motivate everybody else, and you're saying, hey, we need to do it like Joe's doing it here. This is how we need to play. But in the next drill, maybe Joe's not running as hard as he needs to, and maybe it's Billy over here now that is, hey, guys, this is the way we need to run the floor. And so I just think because of the ups and downs of people, everybody has a responsibility for leadership. And if everybody would take that on and try to model and promote your values, nobody's going to be perfect. But we'd have enough people to choose from that those values would be promoted consistently. But I will say, as hard as we try to be self-aware, and it's something I've, you know, worked hard at and have prided myself on, is to be able to be self-critical. You still need to have someone else that you trust. It could be a parent, a teacher, a coach, a mentor, a friend. It could be anybody that you trust to be totally honest with you and that you will allow to be totally honest with you, because no matter how hard you try to evaluate yourself, there's inevitably going to be some blind spots, and you need somebody to be able to say, hey, Stan, like, this was good, but you need to think about this. This did not come off well. You know, the way you communicated to that person sounded condescending, and, you know, there's got to be a better approach, and to make you sit back and think even more. And in my experience with high-level athletes, the best people are the ones who really welcome and actually not even welcome, they crave critical feedback. I mean, they want to get better. Like, they, I mean, everybody needs encouragement at times. It's got to be done in the right way, but we're not talking about yelling, screaming, demeaning. But the best people, they want somebody to show them how to get better, because they're driven, whether it's in a, you know, whether I'm out campaigning for, you know, some social cause, or I'm trying to win more games. You know, I want to do it better. I want somebody to tell me how I get better. You know, there was a story told, and I wish I could remember the author right now, of at one of the best music academies in the world. It was in Europe. And this guy went in and studied these great musicians. And he said they literally wanted no part of music instructors who would just come in and tell them, oh, that's great, because that didn't make them any better. If that's all the person offered them, they demanded to have a new teacher. They wanted somebody who was going to say, okay, that's good, but this is a new level you can get to doing that. I believe that about the best people. They want somebody to say, hey, I don't need somebody else to tell me how great I am. Like Carol Dweck said to her students, I need somebody to help make me everything I can be. Help me. Tell me. Help me.
That's awesome, Stan. And personally speaking, when you transition from one of the top coaches in the game to an analyst, was that hard?
Well, it's still ongoing. Yeah, I mean, it is hard. I don't have much experience at it. I didn't grow up around it like I did with coaching. So coaching, my dad coached for 40 years. Most of his best friends were coaches. I grew up around coaches. And then I knew I wanted to do that, and I studied it. So it's been a lifetime of preparation to do that. You know, the media part of it is all new. And so, you know, I have to, and I have asked people for feedback in that. I mean, tell me what I need to do to be better, because it's something I, quite honestly, I know about the game that I'm watching, but how to communicate that to fans, how to, you know, like one of the things I need to do, which you can tell from this interview, is I need to make my points more concisely, you know, and especially, no, really, but especially in a game, because like you might have 10 seconds to make a point. What's your point? Like, I remember one of the first times Mike Breen, who works with my brother on TV, was listening to me do a college game. And I asked him for some feedback, and he said, you're approaching it like a coach, and you're trying to tell the viewers everything you saw on that play. He said, we don't have time for that. What's the most important thing you saw on that play? Just tell us that. Tell us one thing, and then get out and let the game speak for itself.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we hope you enjoyed today's conversation. If you'd like to attend and join deep dive discussions, please visit www.imperfectleaders.com. Until then, we'll see you next week.